For the latest, log on to ewn.co.za or the new EWN app.
Your news.
Your voice.
Your city.
Your issues.
Your evenings on 702.
Let's walk the talk with Aubrey Masango.
8 minutes after 9 o'clock, and welcome to the second hour of the show. Thank you so much to Dr. Philip Patudi, who's an ophthalmologist, and the conversation was really about glaucoma this evening. And we need to go and get checked. We need to go and check it out. I think it doesn't hurt to just go and get checked out. And the earlier they detect some of these things, the greater your chance of recovery is, so that they can help you with that. In this hour, I'm going to be having two conversations, and the first one starts in a few moments' time with the Executive Director of Corruption Watch, Karam Singh. Now, you will have heard all sorts of accusations, all sorts of allegations made against the Speaker of Parliament, who has taken some form of special leave during all of this controversy. Yeah, talking here about Nosiviwe Mampisa Nqakula. And there has been a motion of no confidence proposed by the Democratic Alliance. Although we hear that it hasn't been updated, or it hasn't been scheduled in the updated parliamentary calendar. So it looks like maybe that conversation isn't going to take place within this parliamentary's calendar. But that may mean that there is no ethics report on the issue. Now, without an ethics report adopted in the House, all outstanding matters lapse by the end of the parliamentary term. Put simply, if no confidence motion and ethics complaints are not finalized by this Thursday, they simply fall away. It is unlikely that in a new post-29 May parliament, this issue will be revised, since Mapisa Nqakula herself is not on the governing ANC's election candidates list and will not return to domestic public life. And to get better understanding of this whole situation, we invited Karam Singh to explain to us what are the possible ramifications and of all of these considerations at this moment. And he joins me now on the line. Karam, thank you so much for joining us. Really, really appreciate your time.
Thanks for having me.
So it appears that we've got very little time to get this issue debated and discussed in Parliament, so that there is some sort of an ethics report. Because if we don't have the ethics report, as I understand it, then this whole case falls away?
Yeah, I mean, I'm also sort of trying to get up to speed with this, but that's also what I've surmised. But it could very well be that an adverse finding against the Speaker by Parliament, or a finding of ethical misconduct, is the least of her problems if she's facing serious criminal charges that could, if they're successfully prosecuted, send her to prison.
So what I'm hearing is that there are two processes here that we're talking about. There's the parliamentary process, and then there's the criminal justice system process. So you're saying even if it falls away because of the time issues and the fact that we're going into a new dispensation as far as parliament is concerned, she still faces all of these allegations from a criminal justice point of view.
Exactly. I mean, these are two completely separate processes. So, as you said in your intro, if she's not on the party list and she's retiring from public life, then then if those processes aren't able to take place before this parliament finishes, then that's going to fall away. But in terms of certainly what it seems to be that she's facing in terms of criminal charges from the MPA for corruption, I mean, those are very serious charges. She would be one of the most senior officials from the governing party to date to be charged with these types of charges. And if the MPA is able to prove their case and successfully prosecute her, then she would have to spend her remaining days behind bars. I'm not holding my breath that that process is going to happen anytime quickly, but it certainly seems like the NPA has got a case and that they're going to pursue these charges.
What is the speaker accused of, Karam?
From my understanding, you know, she was previously Minister of Defence. And what it's alleged now is that during her time as minister, she solicited bribes from a service provider that won contracts from the Department of Defense. So it's a real classic kind of bribery, corruption case around charges of bribery. I mean, she does have other misdemeanors on her record if you... look at her record as speaker. But in terms of the criminal charges that we assume are going to lead to her imminent arrest, these relate to allegations of bribery.
She is accused, I believe, of a soliciting a bribe that amounted to 2.3 million rands, but we're also beginning to hear that it might have gone up to as high as 4 million rand. What is the real story there?
You know, this is very much an unfolding story. The information that I have is the same information that's been in the media, in the public domain. Whether the authorities, those that have investigated the matter, and the NPA have additional information, I think that's going to have to all come out. So this is an unfolding story, and other than what's been reported in the press, I don't have any special knowledge about this matter. Yeah.
The political rumor mill, and I suppose it's to be expected, is suggesting that this is something that goes beyond just a matter of justice being sought, that it is politically motivated. And I think she's also intimated to such sort of reasoning. What do you read into this?
Well, I mean, if that were to be the case, then one would be impugning the credibility of the National Prosecuting Authority. The conspiracy behind that would then say that somehow the NPA is doing the bidding of some factional groups within the governing party. I find that difficult to believe. I think, the NPA has come in for a lot of criticism in terms of their ability to effectively drive these corruption cases over the line. But I've got no reason to question the integrity of the leadership of the NPA. And I think the reason this matter has come to a head is because evidence has come into their possession, including, information that people have put on affidavit that have made these claims. Unfortunately, we do live in a body politic in a period where there's incredible amounts of distrust. So whenever anything happens, people are quick to jump to conspiracy theories. I mean, I did an interview the other day where people were claiming that Marcus Yuste, they must produce the body, that somehow he might still be alive. So it's unfortunate that we have this kind of, that this is the nature of our political culture, but I've got no reason in this matter, no evidence to question the bona fides of the NPA.
The other issue that's arising in all of this is the issue of the timing, that it happens just before a few months or a few weeks, perhaps, before the elections, the general elections, and that there seems to be a purging of certain individuals from the ANC's top sort of brass. Does that carry any weight?
It doesn't carry any weight with me because I'm not an insider into ANC politics to really understand how that could be the case. I mean, the party lists were produced before this story emerged. The speaker's been in politics for a long time. She's also been dogged for a long time with allegations. But I don't have any reason to believe or even to speculate that the timing has got anything to do with the elections. We've seen a number of corruption cases since the end of the the State Capture Commission enrolled at different times. In fact, in some cases, it seems that the matters have been enrolled prior to the NPA really being able to ensure that they're ready to proceed with their case. But I don't see any correlation between the timing of these events and the impending election.
Yeah. What about the issue of her imminent arrest that we were hearing about as of late last week, that she is going to be arrested and so forth? In fact, I think today her lawyers were arguing that there is actually no need for her to be arrested. Why would she need to be arrested?
Well, I mean, if she is being charged criminally, that is the process which happens if the offense in question is one which, would merit incarceration. She would have the right to apply for bail. She would be able to, they'll seize her passport and they'll say that she's a flight risk, and she'll have to make representations to say why she's not a flight risk, that she's not someone who's a threat to society, so she has a right to bail. But those are the normal processes that have to play out. And, we live in a society where we're meant to all be equal before the law. If a shoplifter is arrested, he doesn't have the kind of power or privilege to try to seek an interdict to stop his arrest, bringing in senior counsel. The speaker's operating as if she is somehow a special type of species of person that's above the law. It's kind of quite extraordinary that she would try to seek the interdict of her arrest when, she has, basic rights. So she has the presumption of innocence. She's got the right to understand the charges that are being placed before her, and she has the right to apply for bail. But I don't think that she has the right to try to stop the authorities from arresting her if they feel they've got sufficient evidence to pursue a case against her.
Because that's obviously the argument that she has been putting forward, to say, look, my presumption of innocence has already been violated because they are coming after my arrest. And you're saying that the arresting of anybody charged with an alleged crime is normal. It's par for the course.
Absolutely. And the presumption of innocence doesn't fall away. I mean, the state has to prove its case. It has to put the case before the defendant. It has to produce evidence. And then, the defendant with her legal team has got an opportunity to pick that apart and to say that it's not right, it's not good evidence, it's based upon bad information, and that's the way the criminal justice system is meant to work. What we've seen in the recent period, or not, over an extended period of time, is that politically powerful people deploy what they call a Stalingrad strategy, to use every tactic available to delay the case. Including going after the prosecutors and going after the authorities and questioning their bona fides. In this case, the speaker's doing it before the case has even started. In Jacob Zuma's case, it's been going on for over a decade.
It appears that maybe this question must also be asked, because it is one that is going to surface. We're seeing how a number of individuals in the ANC's list of possible candidates for parliament are being scrutinized at the moment, and many of them have been found guilty by their own ethics committee for reason to answer to the law at some point or the other. And I imagine that this issue is going to arise very, very often. We as a country are looking for accountability. We're looking for somebody to show us that the rule of law still is something that we can believe in South Africa. And we are so ready to find somebody to answer to questions. What does that mean for the pursuit of justice for those who are then accused of anything? Is there any concern to be had about the fact that the environment is so toxic as far as justice is concerned that people are being considered guilty even before they've been found to be so? Is there any room for that? I mean, I've been hearing some political people talk in those terms.
I think it is, you know, what you're pointing to is a real conundrum and a real kind of toxicity, you know, within our system. The ANC put in place a step aside rule. They said that, you know, if there's allegations of corruption against people, that they would be put through some type of a process, whether it be an internal process or otherwise. It's true, and I think we'll see more of this, that, one way to try to neutralize one's political enemies or opponents is to try to tar them with a brush of corruption and misconduct. And I think that can create some confusion out there in the public. What's challenging is that, you know, there are people on these lists, quite senior, you know, that do have cases to answer, where there are clouds, you know, where there are concerns that their allegations, in some cases negative findings, in some cases allegations that still need to be tested. So, you know, the electorate has an opportunity, you know, when they go to the polls to give that, you know, to make that a serious consideration, you know, and that does then become, a kind of accountability type of vote. But we have a serious accountability deficit. We've seen very few senior political officials prosecuted for corruption, and that's despite, you know, a significant disclosures and serious investment, you know, particularly in understanding what happened under state capture.
Yeah. Talk to me about what you think about the speaker's guilt or innocence.
Oh, you know, I mean, it's very unfair. It's very difficult to comment, and one really wants the criminal justice system to be able to do what's required, to be able to present the case, for the speaker to answer the case, and then for the wheels of justice to turn. As I've mentioned, and that's been, you know, in many of the media coverage, the speaker has had, you know, there have been different breaches, ethical breaches on her part that have led to her, being docked pay, receiving kind of a light sanctions. These are absolutely serious allegations that she's facing. It's at a time when she was Minister of Defense. We know that the defense industry is one of the industries which is particularly vulnerable to this kind of corruption. We had a corrupt arms deal, which we've never seen real accountability for. There was a commission of inquiry that was a whitewash that was thrown out. So it's not, the allegations are not outlandish. They've been there as a result of an affidavit that somebody's put to. And, it's really for the courts now to test the charges, for the charges to be placed, and for the court to deal with the matter. We can speculate long and hard in the court of public opinion, but you've got to prove these cases on the basis of evidence.
We had the Zondo Commission that cost us just over R1 billion, that made certain recommendations about certain people who need to either be investigated or have criminal charges laid against them. Is this perhaps the beginnings of that kind of process? I'm talking about as to high-profile political leaders. Is this the beginning of that? I ask this because the the complaint has really been that, look, we've had the recommendations from the Zondo Commission. Why have we not seen any arrests? Do you think that this is, in fact, the beginning thereof? And how sustainable do you think this is?
Well, I mean, there have been arrests. You know, there were 8 or 9 significant state capture cases that the NPA have enrolled. The first case was dismissed by the High Court in Bloemfontein in the New Lane investment matter.
Yes.
The Mashele Koko case was struck off the roll, I think the NPA has said that they will re-enroll that case. You know, this is probably the first high-profile case we've seen that's not, you know, as a direct result of information that flowed from the State Capture Commission.
Yeah.
I mean, one doesn't want to say that one hopes that this is the beginning of something new, because we know that we live in a corrupt country. We know that that there's been, you know, that there was an era of state capture, which a lot of people were implicated in, including the former state president, and that there should be accountability for the actions of senior powerful political figures for corruption. The NPA was captured itself. It took a long time. It's taken a long time for it to get back to a place where it feels that it has the capacity to drive these cases. So I think there's an expectation that we will see more cases. But it's really not just about cases being enrolled now. It's really about these cases being successfully driven to prosecutions. And that's what we haven't seen to date. And I think that's going to be what's critical going forward in order to change this perception that we're on a, you know, we're on the wrong kind of trajectory when it comes to the fight against corruption.
As we close, Karam, is the NPA fully capacitated to be able to go after these kinds of cases and actually win at this point?
I think on their own admission, it's something that's still that they're still battling with. I think the idea of a fully capacitated NPA that can execute its mandate without fear, favor, or prejudice, that's not dependent upon resources, that has the best legal minds running these cases, is not where we're at the moment. And I think that's, you know, from the NPA's own admission. So, yeah, the capacitation and the you know, the ability of the NPA to fully execute its mandate is something which we still need to see.
Karam Singh, Executive Director at Corruption Watch, thank you so much for joining us.